all this. So it was starting out the conversation. We haven't officially started it yet. This is off the cuff. So this was. Well, why don't you don't introduce yourself yet? Why don't you? But now we're going to start. This has never been done before, by the way. Fantastic. This is the first in many, many of these conversations. Without saying even who you are, tell me what you just said that you wanted to see if you could do because of the way the studio sounded.
I want to try to hit the post.
You want to try to hit the post. And what song did you want?
Peg by Steely Dan. Ladies and gentlemen and friends beyond the binary, you are listening to Dennis the Menace. You've got Cameron Bright here. And we're about to hear some Steely Dan with their classic hit single, Peg, from their...
Oh!
No!
It's probably better that I didn't do it.
It's definitely better.
Yeah, but
I guess it's an acquired
skill. But I was rolling, so...
So you kind of screwed up.
No. Now we're going to officially start.
Okay.
That was great.
Honestly, that was quite good.
That was great.
I was doing okay for a second.
I knew you were in trouble. And I'll explain to you why you were in trouble.
I knew you were in trouble from the minute you
walked. You know why you were in trouble? Because there were two posts you could have hit, right? You could have hit. Yeah, let's. So you could have hit. You could have hit. I'll show you exactly where you could have. You could have hit right here. Or you could have hit right here. But then you also could have talked up to the vocal.
I seen your picture.
But you didn't do it.
You didn't do it.
Didn't do any of the above.
It was pretty good.
On the other hand, I do that all the time.
Almost.
It's an acquired skill, I guess.
You get them next time.
But what a great start.
Thanks for letting me take a swing.
That was fun. Would you introduce yourselves, please?
Yeah, sure. My name's Kiki.
I'm Cameron.
See, now we're officially on. Can you tell the difference?
Yes.
I'm Dennis the Menace now.
Yeah, now you are. Mm-hmm. I just watched the transformation.
I feel menaced.
Me too. Let's see. We got you Toronto. We got your first single in 2021-ish. You're an indie pop duo. You met in music school. You've done EPs. You have, I love this, creative and ideological chemistry.
Indeed.
So let's start with Toronto. Are you both originally from Toronto?
Just outside of Toronto.
Tell me about, is it Humber?
Humber.
See, that's what I want. I know.
Because yeah.
Right?
Humber, yeah. That's where we went to school. That's where we met.
And Humber, now you major, see, I'm going to save you a lot. You major in vocal.
Yes.
Right? In singing and vocals. But I think I'm right that it's like Berkeley in that it's a jazz school.
Yes.
And that usually means, and everybody refers to that one movie, you know, that everybody's seen. Mm-hmm. But what I know about those kind of schools is you either say, I want to get the theory, I want to get the groundwork, I want to get the stuff I need to know, and then I know I'm going to break every rule. Or I'm going to go in there, I don't want any of that, and I'm going to break every rule. So you didn't know each other immediately. So let's take it before you knew each other. What possessed you to go to that school? And what did you hope to get out of it?
For me, I had heard a lot of really good things about the program. And I had no interest in going to school for anything other than music.
You don't want to go for like science or law or pre-med or...
I had no other interests. I was pretty, single-minded and it... I don't think it would have been an option for me to not go to school. So I was like, okay.
Parents, parental units?
Yeah, I think my mom would have been not into that.
Yeah, I get it.
So I had heard good things about the program, and I also had heard that it was one of the programs that would let me kind of access more contemporary, like pop music as well, later into the program.
Whereas, oh, okay, that's good.
Because I didn't really want to be doing classical stuff.
What?
Yeah,
oh,
but
there's a lot of that.
That was my jazz imitation, by the way.
It was fantastic.
We picked it up.
Yeah, it was gorgeous. But yeah, so I honestly did not know that. Like, I had listened to a bit of like Dean Martin and Frank Sinatra. Like, my dad would play it around the house a bit. But other than that, I did not have very much jazz experience or knowledge. So when I decided I wanted to audition for Humber, I kind of had to do a bit of a crash course in like figuring out how to sing jazz music because I had to audition.
So you booped and bopped
a little bit.
Got it.
I booped and bopped a little bit.
Yes. How about you?
Yeah. Well, I grew up. My parents were both gigging and session musicians.
Oh wow. Okay.
A lot of jazz music in the house.
Session musicians in Toronto.
Yeah.
So like, what kind of sessions? Like, who do they play with?
My mom sang backgrounds for Jeff Healey. Sass Jordan. My dad has toured with Kim Mitchell extensively. Yeah, lots of stuff in that ilk.
Wow.
Like Canadian heavyweight session work kind of thing.
Wow.
So I was surrounded by like a lot of killer session players. And, you know, my parents did a lot of weddings and corporate gigs that were like, you know, jazz nights.
Sure.
So I would be tagging along to their gig and listening to 3 hours of standards. So it was definitely part of the vocabulary of the music in the house. And so going to jazz school made sense for me. And I also knew some people who taught there who were friends of my parents and stuff. So I was familiar with some of the teachers. I knew they were killer players. So that really motivated me to go. And, you know, I never want to make it seem like we're trying to like denigrate jazz by any means by saying that we found each other in spite of the jazz programming, more just to say, I think foundationally, like jazz music theory is really useful for music education, but when it's not like your bread and butter creatively, after a while it can feel like, oh man, we're talking about a lot of sharp 11s and blah, 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 blah. And, mm-hmm. you know, does anyone else here like Katy Perry? And Kiki yeah. did.
You two meet. And it wasn't like, oh, we're going to be boyfriend and girlfriend. I'm assuming this. You met over music.
Oh, yeah. No, yeah, we were barely even, like, friends for the first couple years of the program. Like, we were in a lot of the same classes, but it was just like, hey, there's that guy in my class. Like, we really didn't connect until we started talking about pop music. And then we were like, oh, yeah, we should be working together.
Writing pop songs for others versus yourselves. When did you know that this was kind of where you were going to take it, that you were going to write these pop songs with that other edge?
I mean, I think a lot of my favorite music is very layered in that way, where if you want to just be taking it in on the surface level, you're having a good time. But if you want to be reading into it more, you're also having a good time, or maybe a sad time, whatever it is. But I think that and also, like, sometimes you'll listen to a song for the 100th time and you hear it in a new way.
Oh, yeah.
And I just think that I want us to be making music that has that ability to be kind of able to be heard in different ways depending on where you're at in your day when you're putting it on.
Yeah, you want it to be effective for active and passive listening. And I think that Trojan horse effect you're talking about, where, like, the candy sneaks in the serious stuff, I think that works in both directions, where a band like Nirvana or My Bloody Valentine, where people talk a lot more about the texture or the presentation or the attitude of it, the reason why that stuff has longevity in an ocean of other stuff that had cool texture and attitude from that time, is that they're like excellent melodicists, and like the writing is seriously hooky and engaging aside from all the cool factor. And I think the same is true of like Katie and Taylor and all the sort of like quote unquote bubblegum stuff. It's like really hooky, but fundamentally like super emotional songwriting that has a lot more depth than people give it credit for. And so I think we try and live somewhere in the middle ground between those two categories, where some songs Trojan horse in one direction and some do it in the other. But either way, you want to have a balance of the bitter and the sweet.
When did you know? Was there any moment that you either turned to each other and said, you know, I think we've got something here?
Definitely. Yeah. I think, well, it's funny because like when I first started writing songs, I think I just thought they were the greatest just because I made them, you know? I was like, this is fantastic. This didn't exist before and now it does and I did it. So it's good. Mm-hmm. But the, you know, like more when I was a little kid. And then eventually you start to get to a point where you're like, okay, do I actually think this is something that someone else other than like me and my friends would care to hear? And when I put on music, what's drawing me into it? What are the things that make me actually want to be putting this music on? And I think that we definitely, I think we were writing songs and eventually got to a place where we were like, these songs are really meaningful to us and we feel that they deserve to be out in the world. And
yeah, I can think of a particular song.
Start a band.
We had this song Unwant You on our first EP in 2016. It was one of the first songs we wrote together where I feel like we went, oh, this is like a serious piece of songwriting that mm-hmm. we should create a platform for in some way.
It actually stands up to other things that you like.
Yeah, mm-hmm. and other people we knew would come up to us rather than being like, ah, oh, good song or whatever. Be like, I relate to what that song says because I'm going through something like that. I think that was honestly one of the first times I had that experience where people I barely knew, friends of friends, would come up to us after a show and be like, that's exactly how I feel. And I think as soon as that clicked and we went, okay, it has to be compositionally sound and it has to be something that matters to other people's emotional experience
as well as our own. Yeah.
I feel like that song definitely was a turning point for the how seriously we took the project.
Yeah.
Every once in a while, somebody gets really lucky and they write a pop song. It's very, 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 very hard to write a true pop song. Oh, I have to go here. The concept of creating songs that feel like they already exist. Wow. Mm. Wow, man. That's pretty spacey stuff.
Yeah, man.
Yeah. Wow, man. Right. I was going to say, bring in the mushrooms, baby.
Yeah. Sometimes when we're writing something, we have to kind of be like, does this already exist?
Is there going to be a lawsuit?
Yeah. Well, yeah. Because sometimes something kind of floats into your head pretty fully formed. And I mean, it's not every day that happens. But then when it does, you kind of have to be like, is this something that I heard long ago? Or is it like you kind of have to do a bit of deconstruction to figure out. But that's often some of my favorite pieces of writing of ours are things that kind of just fall into place pretty seamlessly.
But yeah, like am I conceiving of this or remembering it?
I definitely think that there are people that notice the care that we put into the songs we make. But I think that there are a lot of people that don't, and that's fine too, because really the core of it for us always is the melody and lyric, and that's something that we definitely put a lot of care into as well. And I think as long as the song itself is something that we stand behind, then all the kind of ways that the production can come together and all the specific vocal editing and, oh, I don't like the way I said that one word and all that kind of stuff, that eventually over time becomes a little irrelevant feeling as long as I feel like I stand behind the song.
Yeah, the integrity of the songwriting is definitely the baby girl sound more than anything else. And then all of the production arrangement stuff is icing on the cake to that. And I think like I'm especially obsessive on the engineering side of what we do to a point and like tracking, like Kiki's always having to stop me being like, you've done 150 takes of this rhythm guitar part. Like I'm sure it's in there. And I'm like, yeah, but I want to get this whatever. Mm-hmm. It becomes unproductive after a point. But I do think that I know how closely I listen to my favorite music and how much they hold up over time and can handle that level of scrutiny. And I like knowing that we're putting out stuff into the world that maybe could handle that same amount of scrutiny from careful ears. And I think that we get a lot of feedback from our fellow artists who are people who go through that same process, who appreciate it. And more than anything, it's just, I want to be able to put it on and not have like something that's bothering me.
Yeah.
You know, I want to be able to throw on our EP in the car and be like, oh yeah, it's good.
But I love the goldfish metaphor. That the only thing that's left to talk about is like, how's the goldfish?
Yeah.
Crushes are like the coolest thing in the world, but they're the most heartbreaking, painful things if you have it. And A, the person doesn't turn out to be worthy of the crush. They disappoint you. B, they reject you. Or C, you see it later and go, whew, glad it was only a crush.
Or D, it just keeps existing. And it's just like, okay. The cool, like we're not gonna go there, but I have a crush on you still.
Yeah, they never end, right?
Yeah, I mean, I guess it depends. Sometimes you definitely outgrow a crush, but yeah, they're also just really fun to write about. I think we both really like writing about that feeling, whether it's just like, you know, the two ships passing thing, where it's just like the timing didn't work out, but you're still a very special person. And because that's also, I think, just a great thing in general to write about is like, we only get to walk one path.
Right.
But there's so many other little offshoots that we're constantly making decisions that are cutting those alternate paths off. And so I think it's just more about the kind of larger thing of how insane it is that your life could go so many different ways.
Oh, yeah.
And that's just this, like, very creative. It's very creatively interesting to think about. And, yeah, like, a lot of my favorite movies kind of live in that world as well of just, like, the what ifs.
I've invented a thing called a musical sandwich. And what it is two of your songs is the bread, and then songs by others in between.